but I know that.
Bye.
and welcome. And welcome to another African Rhythms. I'm David Love Jones. We got a special edition for you tonight. And that is our main man, Jason Hoover. And we've been archiving his history. He's the R&B king. And we're going to tell that tale tonight. He's lived here in Vancouver, Canada since the 60s. And he's got quite a tale. Welcome to the show, Jason. And welcome back. Incredibly, from Philadelphia, Michael Ingram.
Good evening, everybody.
Wow, I tell you, it's just really something to just get to know Mike. He's really an on-top guy.
Yeah, Mike is very in-depth, shall we say.
Woo! Call me what you will.
Yeah. Well, to start out, before we tell the listeners a lot about your history in the Vancouver soul and funk scene, we should talk about this track that we've played from 75, this Mushroom Records track, Main Man. All I have to say is one name, Jimmy Fallon. Tell us about that.
Jimmy Fallon was Fallon was too much. That was really nice for him to show my album. And it was like four albums that were shown. He was making fun of the album covers. But when he came to my album, he was impressed because he didn't say anything wrong about it, man. Yeah. He said, Jason Hoover this and Jason Hoover that. And then the final words he said was Jason Hoover.
Well, Jimmy Fallon this week, we kid you not, it's got 170,000 YouTube hits. But Jason's record was featured, admittedly in a spoof, on Jimmy Fallon this week. Showed your album cover and then played that track that we just played there, Main Man, from 1975. It was made here and in L.A. with L.A. musicians as well. And that was actually, shall we say, even a throwaway track on the album, but it shows you the quality of the album, that a funky track that isn't even one of the four or five we featured is a hit.
Yeah. Main Man was always, though, popular in the dance sets, when we'd have dance sets. When he sang it live, they'd love Main Man.
Yeah, no, it's wicked. But no, let's go way back to the beginning of when you came here to Vancouver, and we're talking 64, I guess.
64 is right on, Mike. I mean,
Dave.
So, right, we all look alike.
I was an 18-year-old boy just out of high school. And finished grade 12. I came out here just to visit Vancouver. Now, I'd never been to Vancouver. Been to Calgary, Winnipeg, and Edmonton, Saskatoon, everywhere else. And they talk about playing and singing and stuff. So I wanted to go to Vancouver or Toronto because everybody was saying, man, you know, you shouldn't waste your time here. This is a cowboy town. You shouldn't waste your time here. This is a rock and roll town. So I went to Vancouver.
So Vancouver had a hot R&B scene.
And I went on the R&B scene immediately to the New Delhi at the time and the Smiling Buddha.
And the Smiling Buddha had a house band.
And so did the New Delhi. They both had house bands. But the thing about it was I was accepted immediately, which blew my mind. I figured that, you know, they would put me after I auditioned, because they make you audition in the afternoon.
Right.
So you're able to, they have band practice, and they would audition with them. So I sang things that they knew, and I wasn't really sure of the song, but I put out as best I could, and I got a job.
Right. But was there not if not then, but shortly thereafter, one or two members of the Epics are actually in the house band.
They were in the house band. They do, you know, they spell guys off. Like, who can I tell you? Just about everybody in the city played in the Smiling Buddha at that time. They, you know, the musicians that went through there, it was something else. Like Mr. Henry Young, if you're out there, you controlled the play of all that during that period of time because that was his gig.
Henry Young was a guitar player.
Yeah, that's right. And he is the one who was the house band. So he could have anybody he wanted.
Tell me more about Henry Young.
Henry Young is one of the most fantastic guitar players and characters that you could ever really meet.
Yeah. No, he seems like he was special. Did he even play with Bobby Taylor?
Yes, he played for Bobby a few times down at the Elegant Parlor. Yeah.
Because he was better than Tommy Chong.
Let me tell you, when Tommy Chong went down to do some recording with Bobby, they had to tell him to put his guitar away. They have somebody who could play better. So he wasn't on anything. But when it came to live, you know, it was great to have him up around, you know. Not Tommy, but
Henry Young.
Henry Young played beautifully.
He's a legend.
He can blend in with anything, man. I mean, he's great.
Yeah. So the Smiling Buddha was a bit of a dive.
Oh, it was scary for this 18-year-old boy. You know, I mean, people trying to poke you in the butt.
Where was it?
Trying to give you nickels.
But where exactly was it?
They translate that.
Smiling Buddha was down on Hastings. As you turned, if you were on the bus, as soon as the bus got to the next street, which I believe was
Main and Hastings.
It was past that.
Yeah,
it was past Main and Hastings.
Right.
It was down near Carroll. I mean,
right,
going down that way. Mm. So, yes, it was something. It was really something. The place was filthy. There were maggots on the food that they give to the people.
I mean, serious fault.
I saw the guy, you know, drop some food, some rice and whatever it was, the dish, and on the floor, and scoop it up and put it back in the pot.
Yeah.
So that's when I stopped eating there. I ate there for some time. Being, you know, like I'm saying, I'm 18 years old and I'm ignorant.
Well, you're naive. Freshman.
Let's put it this way. Naive is better.
Naive
like
is
that.
Better
like
word,
naive.
Is it? Yeah. And I don't know what's happening, man. All I want to do is do the club gigs. That's all I wanted to do because that's what I was doing in Edmonton, and they told me to get out of town. So I did. And it was wonderful to be able to leave the Buddha after 3 weeks of terror and aggravation. Lashman Dash was some manager, man. He was too much. Jason! He's happy. I don't need you. I get Bobby Taylor. I get Tony Harris. I don't need you. So if I tried to ask for advance, said no, I don't need you.
Or a raise.
Yeah. Advances were tough to get.
Yeah.
But a raise was even harder.
I can't imagine. True.
So you auditioned for the Epics.
Yeah. So Bobby Kidd and Jimmy Harmata. Now, Bobby Kidd is the bass player, the late Bobby Kidd, and Jimmy Harmata is the guitar player. And they played down there and filled in for Henry Young, or when Henry had a better gig, he would bring in musicians and do his better gig. And Bobby Kidd and Harmata were there when I was being auditioned. Hmm. And they really liked me.
Right. So the Epics, they practiced a lot.
Man, they practice every day almost.
Yeah.
Except for the weekends when they went around looking at other bands.
Right. They check out the other bands.
That all stopped after I joined, though. I wasn't going to rehearse more than twice a week. You
know? So at what point did you start guesting and doing Motown covers on the Let's Go TV show, which was national?
After 2 years of being popular as Jason Hoover in the Epics, they phoned me up and they said, listen, we want you to come to the show and do the show. So I did either 7 or 8 shows with whoever they had on the show, and including, you know, Stevie Wonder, which is another story we could get into, but other acts were big time. Jackie Wilson, Supremes, what are those girls? They were so good. Do I Love You? What were they called? Come on. Rhonda. I know Rhonda.
Ronettes.
Ronettes. Yes, all these people. I played with them all.
Right. So basically, you were only able to do covers.
At the beginning, of course. Didn't get into writing stuff till much later.
Right. Until towards the end of the Epics. And then at that point, you started building up some of your own catalog of tracks.
Exactly. Mm. And one of them was King Size.
And another one was the B-side of King Size.
Baby, I Love You.
Baby, I Love You, which is not the Aretha song, by the way, folks.
Yeah, and it's not the Trials of Jason Hoover. It's actually the Epics.
All right, well, why don't we capture you at a moment around this time? Now, this would get to 1968, and at this time, you hosted a whole TV show.
I did. Yeah. And I had the Epics as the band. And we actually had one of the most popular shows on CBC, Let's Go. And it was repeated a few times. It's seen across Canada over again.
Yeah, and then at this time you decided to cover Testify, and who was that by?
It was by George Clinton, and people didn't know who George Clinton was at the time. And he had this band, man, that had, Bootsy, and he had, I mean, they were like freaks. If you thought Sly and the Family Stone were bad, looked weird on stage, George Clinton and his clowns, man, they were too much. They were absolutely too much.
All right, well, let's check out what was at the time Northern Soul. Very early George Clinton, and this is the Parliaments. But this is Jason Hoover live on National Canadian TV, hosting the entire show in 1968 on CBC.
Hi, I hope you like soul music, because that's what we're presenting today on Let's Go. I'm Jason Hoover. These are the Epics.
Indeed, the Epics live in Vancouver, broadcast across Canada. What an incredible moment to have your own TV show that you're the host and everything.
Well, it was really wonderful. It was blown away by the producer, Ken Gibson, who's still involved in CBC, which reminds me, you know, the thing we're project we're doing, we should let him see it before we let anybody else, because he knows the right people to help spread it around. But anyways, he was really in love with me, man. And not only did I do 7 or 8 shows before bringing on myself as a single artist, as well as the group that backed me up, Epics. It was Jason Hoover and the Epics. It was just wonderful, man. And it really helped us when we played across Canada. Unfortunately, it wasn't the Epics that win with the first. It was the Trials. We had a bus.
So you didn't get to go across Canada until then?
Yeah, we didn't go across Canada. We had planned, but you see, there were two guys that did not want to leave their job or security, as let's put it, and that ruined it. So we had to fire them. We had to let them go, let's put it that way. We had a meeting of minds. They weren't going anywhere, and we wanted to make these tours. I mean, we had people that back east that were begging and even flew out to see us and talked to me and said, we're going to put you back east and play. So we had to do that. And we replaced them with two good people. And they were wonderful, like Steve Cartmell and Ian Hood were wonderful. Steve was on keyboard and Ian Hood was a drummer.
Right. But, I mean, getting back to this 1968 TV show, I mean, wasn't it interesting that it seems like you got to pick some of the tracks?
I got to pick all the tracks.
Yeah, because you changed the format. Like, I think they usually just had the top three top three tunes of the week, but that's you right. changed it to the top three blues tunes of the week.
That's right.
All right, well, that's a nice lead-in, because we're going to play this Jimi Hendrix cover version of the Wind Cries Mary You Do. Like,
really? You've got that?
Yeah, we've got that right here.
I never knew that. But
I'm David Love Jones, and we've got Michael Ingram, special guest from Philly that I did all the shows back in the 90s here. And Jason Hoover, our special guest, Canada's R&B King, is live here in the studio, 101.9 FM, 604-822-CITR. And coming up next, this is The Wind Cries Mary live on CBC. The show is called Let's Go. This is Jason Hoover and the Epics.
But tonight we're going to bring you the top three blues tunes in Vancouver. After all the jets are in their boxes, and the clouds have all gone to bed, you can see happiness standing on downstream, footprints dressed in red, and the wind whispers merry. A broom is thoroughly sweeping of the pieces of yesterday's life. Somewhere a queen is weeping. Somewhere a king has no wife. And the wind cries merrily. It turned blue tomorrow, sat in emptiness down on my bed. The tiny island sang on downstream. This life that lived is dead, and the wind cried merry. Will the wind ever remember all the names it has known in the past? With this club, this old age, and its wisdom, the wisdom knows this would be the last. And the wind, it screams, merry.
Jason Hoover, live in Vancouver, 1968, National Canadian TV. The show was called Let's Go, and up until then, he had been guesting and doing Motown covers, but on this show, he really got to expand out and got to do some songs he really wanted to do.
Yes, that was a beautiful thing to happen to me, because having people tell me what top 10 tunes to do, and what tunes I should do to come into the Hollywood Bowl or the Grooveyard, I was able and now control of my music, which was really wonderful, because, you know, we had to do these things they asked for, or we wouldn't have done the show.
I don't think it's any mean feat that you not only covered Hendrix, but you covered George Clinton and the Parliaments. These are songs that nobody tries unless they know what the hell they're doing. Yeah. And you know, when you did everything, and I was watching the show with David, you know, it's like for this type of show, you would have had 5 or 6 different singers.
Yes.
Doing these songs. They would have had all this presentation, and everybody else would have had to have different. You did all of this stuff. And I think, from a musician standpoint, that's a very intimidating thing when you can go out there and just drop it like that and roll with different genres and have everybody just sit back and say, okay, we're taking this. It's play it in A, boom, we're good. And that makes a big difference.
Thank you. You just made my day. No, really. Back then, I had no ego. All I wanted to do was to become a recording artist, a famous recording artist. Mm-hmm. I had very little ego, and I didn't run around, running, hey, I'm Jason Hoover, let me in your club, boom. Hey, let me in the station. Hey. Mm-hmm. No, none of that happened. Yeah. I was invited or not at all.
By the time that show came on, were there any original tunes that you had already written?
Yes.
Okay.
There was King Size. Okay. and Baby I Love You were two.
It was not written by me, but it was written by, I forget the fellow's name. But anyways,
it's got hints of Knock on Wood in that one.
It's not the same guy.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying that
I
it uses
a riff.
I think
you've got the cover right there. Yeah. If you look on the back of it, you'll see that. Yeah. There you go.
Right. But did you step to them and say, "I've got this tune, why don't you let me introduce it to the national audience, and let's see what happens?" Because you already had everybody there,
Okay, I had Baby, to be a good boy for 7 or 8 shows, okay, and then sing what they want. There's
Jerry Ragavoy. All right.
So it's a famous person who wrote it, actually.
Oh, yeah, he wrote that. Yeah.
But
I'm the only one, though, outside of the original guy who did Baby, I Love You, which was Haywood or... Tyrone Davis.
Everybody would assume that was the Aretha Franklin, A Baby I Love You song, which it's not.
It's not the same one.
No, it's
absolutely
not the same
different.
Song. Yes. Yeah. But anyway, what a TV show in 1968 that was. In fact, the Dyke and the Blazers and or the Wilson Pickett Funky Broadway is another killer track you guys did.
Well, I tell you, I was so knocked up being in the green room with him in the gardens when he played here in Vancouver. We opened for him.
Mr. Pickett.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I watched him pace. This boy paced like a rooster. I watched him after I got in, I had to do opening the set. I seen him pace, man. Like I've never seen anybody like that, but a rooster just pacing around. And then he finally introduced him. And wow, the crowd went crazy. And I'd never seen a performance. I don't care. I've seen... pictures of Sam McCook and the people that used to sing "Hold On, I'm Coming."
Sam and Dave.
I never seen a show like Wilson Pickett's. Mm. This boy gave it all. Mm. He gave it all up, man, and I was just blown away. And I learned from him. I learned a lot.
Well, let's hear it. Let's hear the Epix version of Funky Broadway.
Oh.
Do I?
We're talking raw funk live on national TV. Once again, let's go. Jason Hoover and the Epics. And this was really the last year, in fact, of the Epics. Because next, who came next, Mike?
Well, I tell you, it's interesting that you did what you did in covering the people that you did, because when you went back to the George Clinton stuff, you were spiraling at the same time that George Clinton decided to go Parliament and Funkadelic.
Right.
So from an artistic standpoint, is it fair to say a lot of the stuff you created was in that phase because of how you...
Well, there was no Parliament Funkadelic. Yeah, the early George Clinton stuff was quite different than that.
No, I'm talking in 69, because that was 68.
68.
Yeah.
Parliament and Funkadelic started doing separate stuff in 69.
69, right.
69. Their first album.
Yeah. They were part...
They were artistically in sync in that regard.
No, I mean, I'm just talking about the Parliaments, which were just a little bit... Like, that was early days, a little bit more like, say, Northern Soul. But I think that the important point is, from 68 to 69, to going to the trials of Jason Hoover, here's one interesting thing that happened, was that the two tracks that you had, Baby I Love You and King Size, were the Epics, but yet they became the first... You tell the story.
Trials of Jason Hoover.
Yeah.
No, I've got to tell you the reason. I had a wonderful manager, and his name was Jack Hirshhorn. And he said, "Listen, we got to change the name of the Epics because we want to go up and start a whole new avenue, okay? And we're going to feature your name, which the Epics did not like. They did not like Jason Hoover and the Epics. They wanted the Epics featuring Jason Hoover. That's the way they wanted. That's the way they've all played with all their earlier singers. So anyway, he said, I want you to be Jason Hoover, the Trials of Jason Hoover. We said, well, that sounds weird. He says, no, that's right. I just see this, the Trials of Jason Hoover. So that was wonderful.
Did you like the fact that the Trials of Jason Hoover represented something that was going on as off the mic as well as on the mic?
You're so slick, Mike. Yes, it's true, man. I went through a lot of phases. I'd go to places, and once they saw the Trials of Jason Hoover, they said, well, we thought you was a country and western band, the Trails of Jason Hoover.
No joke, they said Trails.
You guys take your money and your bus and get out of here, right? So,
and then tell us about the tour bus.
Yeah. The bus was something else. We were one of the first outside of the TV show with the people that had the bus and the rear band, all that stuff. Yeah, so we painted it purple every time, and yellow letters.
Purple and yellow.
White wheels, you know, white wheels, and double white wheels, like eight tires in the back.
They know you're coming.
Yeah, so we were coming. Not only that, the police, the RCMP, the FBI, I'm talking about all the state police that we went through in the Border Patrol. We were haunted people. Mm-hmm. I mean, we couldn't go into one state to another without being pulled over by the state police. Where are you? You lose your circus trucks and the rest of your boys? We got to check out what you guys got in here, you know?
So the psychedelic bus made you appear like hippies.
Well, we sort of enjoyed the attention too, because we were kids and stuff. You know, we were like the Rolling Stones. You know, we like to cause problems. You know, we liked it.
So you did some writing on the bus.
Oh boy, I wrote four of the songs that you have here, I think, tonight on that bus.
Mm, right.
And we had a table. We had 1, 2, 3 beds. Double bed and one bed behind it. And then we had a couch and a table, built in. It was wonderful bus. It was wonderful.
So who were you, because let's face it, with Trials, it was slightly more rock and soul and blues, right?
Exactly. We played rock and soul, and that's exactly what you could call us, a rock and soul funky band.
From a Canadian standpoint, did you think more folks enjoyed you in that Trials phase than they did when you were doing the soul covers?
Yes, absolutely. And to make a long story short, we played at the Gardens and opened for a few major bands. Okay,
and tell us some of them.
Same promoter, yeah. Mm-hmm. He would bring us in. Okay, and we do Led Zeppelin.
Okay.
I can't remember all these people's names.
Uriah Heep?
Uriah Heep, yes, we did Uriah Heep. But the other boys, we had...
Vanilla Fudge?
Yeah, Vanilla Fudge, there you go. Yeah, we partied with them, too. They were great. They were great people. And we thought they were weird because they put on a hell of a show. Mm-hmm. And yes, we learned a lot from them, too. We thought we could be just as good. And when we wanted to do the Jimi Hendrix show, but they wouldn't let us do the Jimi Hendrix show. So.
Wouldn't let you? Why?
Well, I didn't really ask any questions because the same promoter brought Hendrix in that brought all these other people in. Uh-huh. So I was just grateful. I was not going to say, let me play. I want to play Hendrix. You know? Uh-huh. No, what they had for Hendrix was Tommy Northcott and a complete different sort of it was country, you know, but, country funk, folk, I mean, folk, folk
but,
music.
But going back to 1968, when you did... First, when you did that Zeppelin gig, which, by the way, Zeppelin only played five songs, and then Vanilla Fudge headlines. So that was actually at that time, I know it's hard to remember, it's so long ago, yeah. But at that time, Zeppelin were unknown. In fact, they hadn't even played them on the radio yet.
I didn't even know them. Yeah. You know, when they came in second, we were first, they were second, and then the Vanilla Fudge.
Yeah.
Okay, we, you know... Don't you leave my, don't you, babe. That song just drive everybody crazy. You know?
The Supreme but, cover, yeah, you keep me hanging
but,
on.
You know,
yeah,
but,
keep me hanging on. That's
you right. know, by five or six more dates, and Zeppelin were no longer not the headliner. So very shortly after that.
Yeah, but they had this White Album was out at the same time they were making that North American tour. You told me that you,
it came out during the tour.
The Cream album, I should say. It's Cream,
what Zeppelin One, it's called.
Exactly.
Or some people, yeah.
Yeah,
so you knew them actually before they were famous, which is rare because that was their Canadian debut.
Like, they were wonderful. I mean, Robert Plant was something else, man. And Jimmy Page, he looked at me outside of his hair and said, listen, Jason, I'm not a guitar player. I play bass. I used to play bass for that group. What?
You're not talking about Robert Plant, you're talking about Jimmy Page.
Jimmy Page.
I'm talking about Jimmy Page.
Yeah.
Okay. Jimmy Page says, listen, I don't play guitar. I says, oh, you don't? He says, no, no, man. I have been forced to play guitar, you know, in this band. I played bass for the group. I forget they had this thing with
Yardbirds.
Yardbirds. Right. Mm-hmm. I played bass for you talk about that guy to play keyboard. Give me some loving.
But Spencer Davis and Eric
Clapton. Spencer Davis and all that. Yeah. He was right there doing cuts. Mm-hmm.
But the night of Zeppelin playing that night, there is one thing about Jimmy Page's solo that you remember. What's that?
He pulled a bow out, man.
Joke.
He pulled a bow out.
I love it. Yeah.
And played some songs. I'm talking played, man.
So
he made sounds that Jimi Hendrix never heard.
I heard that.
Did you know that next morning, the Georgia Strait Review said Robert Plant was no good?
Well, let me tell you about Robert Plant. Robert Plant put on a hell of a show. Mm. Unfortunately, I got to know him backstage because we were all in the same green room. Uh-huh. He had bad teeth. His teeth were rotten. No, it's true. I'm not going to lie to you. And he was going to get his teeth fixed. Mm-hmm. You know, he had to smile, and it sort of held him back, you know, from being as personable as he was when they came back for the second one.
Literally, though, within 4 weeks, they were a supergroup. So it was very, very few people got to see them before they were famous.
Wow, I did. I mean, I opened for them. But the thing was, they opened for Vanilla Fudge at the same set. Same show.
I stuck up this vision in my head of Robert Plant gumming a love song. I'm sorry. Y'all had to make me back
all right.
a little bit.
That's true. But those girls get really close, man, you know, and he probably saw that his teeth are rotten, and he probably held back and did things like this so they couldn't see it.
Well, you mentioned Pickett. I just wanted to get an idea because you were saying as you were going on this musical trip, you started out a little naive. You were picking up things. You picked up something from Pickett. What other musicians did you like that you took stuff from the way they did their thing on stage?
Okay. Well, I have to go back, really back. I loved Otis Redding. I used to do that one thing with the leg for, you know, that he did, you know, when you really got down, can't turn you loose, I would do. I got to say Sam and Dave, too. They were wonderful. And my music was all like that. And then during that period, we're talking about Jimi Hendrix, okay? Mm-hmm. Jimi Hendrix.
Big influence.
From the Pacific Northwest.
Even Spencer Davis Group.
Spencer Davis Group was one of my favorites. I mean, that boy could wail. Give me some love.
Stevie Winwood? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Winwood. He was not only a great keyboard player and guitar player, he could sing his ass. Oops.
Yeah,
That's all right. We're on college radio. So let's jump ahead 1 year. You're on to the third Trials of Jason Hoover single. Of course, King Size was a rocket way to start, because to this day, that's one of your signature songs. So we shouldn't forget mentioning King Size, because that's relevant.
Well, not only is it relevant, my manager was very slick. Jack Kershaw knew what he was up to, you know. Not only that, he also, when he left and went back to California, he sold us to the Guess Who management.
Guess Who was in Midnight Confessions?
I'm talking about Burton Cummings.
Okay, yes.
Uh-huh. The Guess Who. Mm-hmm. And we opened for them everywhere, you know. We parked our bus and we rode on one of those, you know, double-decker. Mm-hmm. we really enjoyed being the front for the Guess Who. And matter of fact, you know, Burton Cummings is playing in Mission next weekend, man.
He's still around.
Yeah, he's still around, man.
Yeah. Well,
He's got all that pizzazz, you know. Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, King Size, you co-wrote it, right?
Yeah, well, okay.
Yeah, you co-wrote it with another member of Trials.
Jimmy Harmana, the guitar player.
Yeah. So what do you think was the influence for the song? Because it is quite a unique-sounding sax-type soul song.
Well, there is no sax solo in that song.
No, I mean Stax.
It's definitely Stax.
Yeah.
We definitely were at more of an Atlantic group. I'm glad you noticed that. We were definitely more of an Atlantic group than Motown.
All right. Well, why don't we listen to it right now? King Size, this is a major signature local legendary Vancouver soul track. That's King Size. Incredible. In a sense, it's one of the last Epics tracks, the hottest band in Vancouver in the 60s. But it's also the first Trials of Jason Hoover track.
And that happened, David, because of our management. He took over from what we had. And
Jack Kershaw.
Yes, the famous Jack Kershaw. He not only produced myself, it was Tom Northcott and the classics with the Howie Vickers.
Right, the classics.
Yeah. And then they turned into collectors, remember?
Yeah, but anyway, we were also talking about the 1969 track, Rhythm is the Way, and it's, even though, again, you wrote the song?
I wrote the song, yes.
Yeah, but even though there's a Sly Stone flavor to it, it's completely yours.
It's definitely ours. Once you hear the rock, see, we're still doing rock funk. See, that was my game plan. Was to keep doing that rock and soul stuff so that people could relate on both sides of the plate.
Yeah.
And that's what my game was. That was like quarterbacking. I wanted to have it that way. So if something's on, a boom boom, a boom boom, a boom boom, a boom boom, 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 you know, we got down. You understand? And then all of a sudden, when people get down, all of a sudden, here it comes.
Here it is.
Depending on our race, there's no language barrier from our funky base. The world has got to change.
learned to ask what was done to do.
And that's Rust to Dust, and that's the next single after Rhythm Is the Way, Trials of Jason Hoover. We're talking about 1971, and you can see the heavy rock influence.
Wow, that just blows me away. Just listening to it today and talking to somebody who's 20 years old and asking him whether he liked this or not, and he says, it's fantastic, he loved it. It just makes my heart warm, man, because maybe we were too soon. Maybe we
slightly should, ahead of your time.
Yeah, maybe. We were in the future a little further than we should have been, but it's happening for, you know, a lot of people like
that. I would contend you were on time. It's just that where you were, you didn't get the exposure that you needed.
But it all came down to money and belief. And for any Canadian artist, first of all, you go to your supply, the guy who's backing you with money, he says, has there ever been a Canadian artist blacked and made us money?
There you go.
And they'd say, well, not yet, but we know Jason can. We just need help. We need help, you know. We'll think about it.
They're
still thinking about it. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, one interesting fact is early on, you played the game on Motown doing Motown covers and whatever on Let's Go. But then when you started doing all your own original material, in some respects for the success, you know, the real sales, it became harder, don't you think?
Oh, man, that's a hard question, because the first song was We Were Happy.
Right.
And it was a ballad, Tearjerker. And that sucker was number one all over Canada, all these little towns and stuff, because it was a heavy tearjerker. And it was a tune that also had a catch phrase with it, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, We Were Happy. They loved that song. And it was nothing to do with Rhythm Is the Way or Rust to Dust.
Mm-hmm.
It was a complete another change for Jason Hoover. So this blew people away. Who and what is Jason Hoover?
Did you find that Canadian radio stations were playing stuff like this? Like, say you were coming to Montreal, and, you know, the radio station's prepping by saying, you know, Jason and it's going to be here Thursday night.
That's right. I've heard a lot of songs when I'm coming back home from Montreal or Quebec City. Mm-hmm. We'd stay 6 weeks in Quebec City. Going through Montreal and Toronto, we had all our radio. That's how we kept our time, to see if we could hear anything. And we heard things in Montreal. We heard things in Toronto. And we got exposure back there. But, like, when we got on the survey, we started, like, 100, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if it didn't get played enough, you never went any further.
Exactly.
You know? Mm-hmm. So that's what happens most times.
All right, well, let's go back to Trials of Jason Hoover.
Oh, wow.
We are all people.
Yeah.
We Are All People. And I would guess the year for that one, 71. Would
right
be
on. Yeah. I just figured it out and I told Mike while we were listening to it. You thought it was 72. It was 71.
71,
right on.
Yeah.
And great exposure on that tune.
Yeah.
It was weird that that tune took more. They played that tune more than the other side, which we were trying to sell. And
we were happy?
No.
We were happy. Was
we
on
put,
a different
we
one.
Put, must remember this, Mike.
Yeah.
David. I mean, Dave. We put this on two sides.
Yeah. So, even your B sides
were
killer.
Away,
Rhythm is the Way.
And
yeah.
We Were Happy has both of
right.
these songs. Yeah. Song, so yeah. We had double exposure on it. But no, We Were Happy was still the best tune. It was one of the best sellers, one of the ones that opened me up for touring in the East and the Midwest. I'm talking Saskatchewan, Regina, mm-hmm. you know, Saskatoon, and into Brandon, Manitoba, Winnipeg, all that area.
But
and,
it's pretty psychedelic.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? It was really like we were doing drugs back then.
Well, hey, I mean, drugs.
Well, I mean, King Size from the year before.
No, King Size, I was straight.
Yeah, but the last lyrics of King Size are, "I'm so stoned, I'm so stoned."
No, that's I don't count smoking a J as being messing with drugs.
I see.
You know, I won't even get into it.
But would you say that We Were Happy was actually your most psychedelic song?
I would say that We Were Happy was the most ordinary shot to the audience that don't listen to this kind of stuff. Yeah. Listen to it.
In other words, psychedelic rock.
It was aimed. No, there was no psychedelics on We Were Happy. It was a tearjerker. It told the tale of the poor boy who loved this woman so much and she was sick. And he couldn't get her any help.
But what about the feel of the song? A little bit psychedelic.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do- challenge.
We lived in a shack by the edge of the river. I didn't earn much, so there wasn't much to give her. Our love was love and it filled every day with a soft warm glow. We were happy. One night she awoke burning up with a fever. I knew she needed help, but I didn't want to leave her. I ran through the night till I thought I would drop. I got to the road, but not one car would stop. And I knew she was dying. I knelt by her side and I prayed until and then as the first sight of dawn gently touched her sweet face, I could tell she was gone. We lived in a shack by the edge of the river. Much, so there wasn't much to give her. But though we were poor, we were rich in a way. For our love was love and it filled every day with the soft glow. We were happy.
Yep, I think there's a little bit of psychedelic going on there.
It is. I suppose if you break it down, yes, it was. But it definitely was a tearjerker and a very popular tune.
Yeah.
I had to play it and a lot of places that we played, because that's what they play. We were happy. Hey, King Size, you know, before well, we even got set up.
One of the young gentlemen from our film crew, we've got Avery, and of course, thanks to Hayden for coming out for this. But young gentleman Josh, who's very involved in film. In fact, he's got a show coming out on the CBC, right?
Oh, no, we're just working on a project. I'm just gonna give a shout out to the Grey Arts Collective.
You're working on a project. What's it called, Josh?
It's very low key right now.
Okay. All right, you got it. All right, well, anyway, this gentleman Josh, he's part of our film crew. We're bringing him out just for a young person's perspective, talking to Jason Hoover.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Well, I just started listening to some of Jason's music right now, and it's fantastic, and I looked up some of your discography on YouTube, and I just know that, like, you know, I guess I might not be the average teenager, but I love funk and I love soul music, and my parents, like, raised me on that. And almost every Sunday, me and my cousin Alex have a tradition. Like, we cook up some, fry up some bacon, some breakfast, and we listen to soul music, and it's, like, fantastic. Yeah.
Love it. Love it, man. That really touches my heart. Yeah. And that you like my music, it's for me, it's great that you, you know, you're 20 years old or so, are in... enjoying my songs.
Yeah, it's fantastic, and I think it, like, a lot of music today, like, lacks that depth, that soul, and, like, I really feel it in your music, and it's just amazing.
Does it sound today?
Yeah. It holds up, man. It holds up.
I can't tell you how old I am, but I'll tell you this. I'm so happy that you young guys really like my music, and, you know, I feel, and I'm not trying to brag or anything, that when I'm dead and gone, that my music will be more popular than it ever was. And that's just the way it usually goes.
Oh, well, man. I would say even, like, release another track. Like, you still have a golden voice.
Yeah. Oh, wow, man.
Well, that is our goal, you know, for this documentary that we're shooting, ladies and gentlemen. Our end goal is to have Jason singing again, and we're hoping to bring that around. We've now been filming for 3 days, and stay tuned for Canada's R&B King documentary, Jason Hoover.
Wow.
But we've got another Trials of Jason Hoover track now, and that's a track called Words. Tell me about this track.
I love this song. Kenny Wayne was a genius. He was with the group, as you called, what was the band that he was with before we had him?
You're talking the Painted Ship.
Yes, the Painted Ship. They recorded before we did.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yes. They had one record out.
Psych Rock Band.
Okay, they were a psych rock band. We were lucky to get, and his name is Ken Wayne. That's W-A-I-N. And he wrote this song. Words.
Beautiful.
And it touched me so hard. I says, are you going to do the song? He says, Jason, this is for you. And when I just about had tears, because when he played it, I swear to God, I could have produced him. He's, you know, he had that feeling. And for me to capture the feeling, I sort of learned from him.
Yeah. You know what? This is yet another very deep Jason Hoover track. Jason, the Trials of Jason Hoover. And it's called Words.
Yeah.
You know, I'd like to have...
All right, and that is Words. And that came out under a short-lived name for your band, Anvil Chorus, although that was pretty much the Trials of Jason.
It was the Trials. It was definitely the Trials, and we were thinking of changing the name on their bus. And Anvil Chorus was something we thought was big like Led Zeppelin. After we went and played open for Led Zeppelin, we figured it was really simple, you know, the Trials of Jason Hoover, the Led Zeppelin. I mean, it was, we wanted something heavy like that. You know?
Yeah, well, it appears Uriah Heep and Zeppelin definitely were an influence on your direction for sure.
Well, honest to God, we had never seen anything like that in Toronto. I mean, in Vancouver.
Yeah.
You know, they played Toronto a couple of times, but we had them in Vancouver on their first actual tour. And they were unknown.
Mm-hmm. I got to ask, Jason, was there resentment regarding your ability to go through all these different genres? Because obviously a band, if they hear all this kind of stuff, they're thinking, okay, we got something that we can work with here, and we're going to stick together for a while. But that wasn't the case. So what happened?
I think, how can I put this? Envy. It was like Jason Hoover and the Epic Zoo was... Trials of Jason Hoover. It was the Jason Hoover group. And then it was Anvil Chorus. They were quite comfortable with that. Unfortunately, the labels, only their local label put our songs out as whatever. But it went back again. It's like I tried to tell David. It went back to the Trials of Jason Hoover because everybody thought that was a knockout name. Mm. Anvil Chorus just didn't make it as far as they thought with the music. And we had Tearjerker, and we also had a rocker, you know, words that you just heard.
Rust to Dust.
Rust to Dust was great. But, you know, I thought it was really wonderful tune, Rust to Dust. And,
it seems it was not produced very much because I've never been able to find a copy of it on 45 or Words for that
matter. Haven't you got it there?
No.
Rest of this?
No, I just had to tape it off our friend Rob, and big up to Rob at Neptune. Big up to Rob at Neptune for all the archiving he's done of your stuff.
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much, Rob. I'm going to come up and see you soon, man.
Yeah. We're going to be over.
Yeah. Happy graduation to your wife's in years, you know, being together for so many years.
Yeah, but tell me 60 Minute Man, because some big people in rock heard this song, didn't they?
Not only that, they all thought, wow, man, this is ass kicking. Is this your band, Jason? you know, did you write this, man? Did he know that the group called, it was an old 3-point.
The Dominoes.
That's the Dominoes. That's the Dominoes.
Dominoes. Yep. There you go. Yep. Mm-hmm. There's new girls of
children. Love and Dan. Yep. Oh, yeah.
Love and Dan. I rock him, roll him all night long. I'm a 60 minute man.
But didn't you completely change the arrangement?
Oh, I changed everything. Yeah. Except if your old man ain't treating right, come up and see old Dan. I rock him, roll him all night long. I'm a 60 minute man. 60 minute man. They call me Loving Dan. I rock him, roll him all night long. I'm a 60 minute man.
Yeah, well, let's hear it right now. What a groove.
I'm not afraid to die.
Wow, that's one funky track, Jason.
Oh, man, I'm so proud of it still today. It was definitely an underground hit, and definitely exposed big in B.C.
Yeah,
right across Canada, of course, but B.C. had a real underground for it.
Burton Cummings heard it.
Oh, Burton Cummings, man, he loved the song, along with Jimmy Cale, the bass player for the Guess Who. And that was the time when they were still together. We played the Orange County Rock Festival. And it was in Edmonton, Alberta, my hometown. And we opened, there was all kinds of bands during the day, but we opened before Burton Cummings and the Guess Who.
Yeah,
and
I heard about that.
The trials of Jason Hoover carried on like it was no, it was just.
What year?
71.
71, yeah. No, you were opening for some big, big rock acts. But, yeah. I mean, we don't going to have much time in this show to talk about it. But let's just briefly mention, of course.
Ike and Tina Turner.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
That's right.
Yeah.
We're talking Wilson Pickett. We're talking, there were so many. I can't even remember myself, man. I mean, it was a lot of people that we met.
But, we started the show playing a track from your 1975 Mushroom album, the one that was on the Jimmy Fallon show.
Yes.
And now we're going to end with another track from your incredible album. And this is a track we haven't, we've done, this is our third show together, right?
Yeah, this is amazing, and thank you very much. I feel very special to be the only one that's done three shows here on David's thing, man.
Well, Michael Ingram, actually.
Are we tied?
We did 35.
Wow! Okay, I'm saying a recording artist.
No, you're right. You're right. Okay. Well, Mike is a singer himself, but yes, you're right.
I figured that out long ago. Yeah. Man, after he told me about myself, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
He held up a mirror in front of me.
No, I'm very thankful.
We all look alike.
There you go.
Well, I'm very thankful to Michael for coming up from Philadelphia for this documentary that we're shooting. And I'm very thankful to our film crew, Hayden and Avery and Josh. You guys all did an amazing
job.
They
are too much. They are great. Yeah. Fantastic. I can't wait to see their work.
Yeah, but She's My Lady. Now, we're going back to the Mushroom album, and this is finally in 75, No More Psych Rock. You got to make your funk and soul album, and She's My Lady was the first hit single?
No. Love Will Get You was the first hit single. It was amazing. I didn't think it would do anything. And it was like really big. You know, I mean, maybe in top 30 right across Canada. I don't know exactly what positions, but it was being played everywhere I went. And we had to play it. Then, She's My Lady came out.
Wow.
But this was a hit across Canada, was it?
Yeah. I remember seeing that album cover of mine. They had a little white thing there saying featuring hits. Love Will Get You in order, right? She's My Lady.
Hypnotized.
That's right, Hypnotized.
Yeah, no, this is a really special track. And if you look it up on YouTube, there's a really killer version from 86 Expo too, right?
Wow, there you got me on Expo, eh?
No, actually it was live in Toronto, but it was the same year as the Expo.
Oh, yeah. Expo was big for us, man.
Yeah.
It really made me solid in the music business industry here in the West Coast.
So, Jason, you said you didn't like you didn't think She's My Lady was all that hot a tune, but real quick, what's the one tune, if there was one, that you thought as soon as it was done, you was like,
boom,
that's it?
I'd have to say She's My Lady, man.
Okay. Yeah.
That's being honest.
There you go.
Man.
No, you've always told me that.
Totally honest. When I was finished, I said, guys, we got a hit.
Yeah. Well, you know what? You always told me that. And, you know, perhaps on this particular show, we didn't get to tell the whole story because, let's face it, you're going to be singing again.
Yeah.
And
sure.
Maybe next time we can get into, you know, your comeback and the whole nine yards. But anyway, we got to cover the Trials of Jason Hoover period quite in depth this time, as well as the epics. So I'm thankful we got to some of that. And it's a beautiful way to go out with She's My Lady. Of course, you've been listening to African Rhythms. I'm David Love Jones.
Hey, David.
to be continued.
Yeah, to be continued. Big thanks to Michael Ingram. And just incredible. And of course, lots of love to you, Jason Hoover.
Yeah.
And you know what? We have a traditional way that we go out with African Rhythms. And that comes from this gentleman, Michael Ingram. So take it away, Michael Ingram.
I got to tell you, if you're in Edmonton, Alberta, Vancouver, British Columbia, Victoria, Toronto, Montreal, Philly, if you want to know where the soul trees go, the root of all of that good stuff can be found right here on African Rhythms.
Peace and love.
All right. That was beautiful. Mike, that's beautiful. I like the way Mike, he wrote a little thing about me, man, that just blew me away. I've never had anybody express themselves and actually catch me, catch picture of me, and only know me for less than a week. And the thing about it is, it's powerful. And for me, it just made my
heart. That's from the heart, my brother. I know you're going to get your just due. And I know that everybody behind this is behind you.
So all right,
I
can
see
that.
We want you to be the star that you're supposed to be.
All right. Thanks again, guys. Peace and love from African Rhythms.